At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Today's episode is brought to you by Mubi, the global film company that champions great cinema. From iconic directors to emerging auteurs, there is always something new to discover. And I'm here to remind you that Chelsea and I's new favorite entry into the glamorous woman having nervous breakdown genre, Die My Love, is still in theaters. A glamorous woman having a nervous breakdown, you say? Yes. Jennifer Lawrence plays a writer who moves into a house she inherited with her husband, played by Robert Pattinson, and their infant son, and she slowly begins to unravel. If you are a new mother, I think you will feel very seen. I know I did. Die My Love marks the filmmaking return of Lynn Ramsey, and she delivers a cinematic vision that charts the complexity of love and how it can change and transform over time. And also about how your husband probably shouldn't get a new dog when you're freshly postpartum. Die My Love is now showing only in theaters. Visit Mubi.com/Die My Love for showtimes and tickets. And to stream great films at home, you can try Mubi free for 30 days at Mubi.com/EveryOutfit. That's Mubi.com/EveryOutfit for a whole month of great cinema for free.
I spent $40,000 on shoes.
What's the matter, Morty?
Great gowns, beautiful gowns.
Fashion has changed. No, it hasn't.
Hi, I'm Lauren Garoni.
And I'm Chelsea Fairless.
And welcome back to the Every Outfit podcast. It feels like I haven't seen you in weeks.
I haven't seen you in a couple weeks because I've been in New York. And I did text you this on December 1st, but I haven't had an opportunity to say rabbit, rabbit in person.
Because that's what really makes for a good month.
Did you say rabbit, rabbit, or did you not say rabbit, rabbit?
I never say rabbit, rabbit. Because usually my first moments of waking up are to a screaming baby. So like, I rarely am thinking about saying rabbit, rabbit. And also, I don't know, it's probably been a good 10 months to a year since I've been up past midnight.
How was your Thanksgiving?
It was good. It was very chill. Just stayed here. Paul cooked. Paul made a duck. We officially have rescinded the turkey.
You're trying to make a statement.
Not trying to make a statement. It's simply that I feel like the past few Thanksgivings, we've all decided we're not going to do a turkey. And then at the last minute, someone in the family freaks out and is like, but we got to have turkey. And this was the first year that it was like, we are spatchcocking a chicken and Paul is making a duck and everyone's going to enjoy it. And guess what they did?
It sounds delicious. But the problem is that you had no leftovers to make the Thanksgiving sandwich, which in my mind is the point of cooking your own Thanksgiving.
Oh, Chelsea, did you cook your own Thanksgiving?
No, I'd rather die than cook my own Thanksgiving. I went to Waverly Inn, which is a classic New York restaurant, had a great traditional Thanksgiving meal, weirdly got a very good table. So it was a magical night overall.
Well, congratulations. Were you able to procure some sort of Thanksgiving sandwich the day afterwards, though?
Yeah, because I had turkey leftovers from the restaurant.
Ah, I see.
And I got an extra stuffing to go. I did that correct.
You know, never would I have thought that the Friends character you're most like is Ross Geller. Like, you would stab a bitch if someone ate your post-Thanksgiving sandwich.
Did you watch the parade or the dog show at all?
I watched clips afterwards. I feel like the past few years I have messed up the timing with the parade. Because this year I'm like, I'm up early with a baby. I'm not going to miss it. Guess what? I was up earlier than it had started. Then I got busy prepping Thanksgiving. And then I was like, oh shit. And I put it on in the middle of the Thanksgiving parade. I noticed a lot of floats that were being pulled by Dodge trucks.
See, that went over my head.
Didn't like it. Felt wrong.
I caught the end half of the parade, but I'm always more into the dog show, especially because this year there was an English bulldog named Prada in competition who I think placed third in the non-sporting category, but did not advance to the final round of the dog show.
It did make me think that if you guys were going to get another English bulldog, it should be named after a designer.
Yeah, we'll see. Jury's out on that at the moment.
I think an English bulldog named Margiela would be perfect. Did you look at your Spotify Wrapped?
Yes, and my listening age is 49.
My listening age is 72, but I think it's because I've used Spotify this year mostly to play like Django Reinhardt guitar music as the baby's going to sleep or when I'm feeding him a bottle because I refuse to listen to traditional children's music.
Well, get ready, bitch. You're going to have to listen to Baby Shark at some point.
I will tell you the most horrifying statistic from my Spotify Wrapped, which was that my most listened to podcast, Chelsea, you want to guess?
Oh, God. What would it be?
My most listened to podcast was the And Just Like That Writer's Room podcast.
God bless. It was probably mine, too. I've gotten behind on like every single podcast I listen to, and now I'm too intimidated to re-engage. Don't do that with our podcast, though, guys. Also, I appreciate everyone that tagged us in the Spotify Wrapped. It's fascinating to see what else they listen to.
Oh, yeah. Writer's Room was not in other people's Spotify podcast most listened to, but a lot of Are You a Charlotte's as well. So we're in the rotation.
Yeah.
So you traveled, which, from what I understand from the news, is an unmitigated nightmare. So how were the airports?
I like literally don't understand because I also traveled like during the government shutdown and it was super easy. Nothing went wrong. The airports were empty. Like, I honestly don't get it.
Chelsea, do you think it's because you took Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy's advice and you dressed a little nicer at the airport?
You have no idea how I looked. I could have looked like shit.
So ahead of the Thanksgiving holiday, as I said, the U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy held a press conference where he said this.
I think, again, I call this just maybe dressing with some respect. You know, whether it's a pair of jeans and a decent shirt, I would encourage people to maybe dress a little better, which encourages us to maybe behave all a little better. Let's try not to wear slippers and pajamas as we come to the airport. I think that's positive.
Chelsea, never did I think I would agree with someone in the Trump administration.
Finally, some common ground. I'm with you. I completely agree with this guy. Although I don't think people dressing better will necessarily fix their behavior, but the fact that they dress like shit is an extension of the fact that they have a general lack of respect for other people at the airport.
Yeah, I will say I agree with what Sean Duffy said with an asterisk because he's like, well, if people dress better, then the experience of being at the airport will be better. And I disagree with that. Like, the government and just unchecked capitalism has made traveling the worst experience ever. But I do think that people should be dressing better.
For sure. And this is not to say that people shouldn't wear sweats or athleisure or whatever the fuck, but like literal pajamas? No, unless they're like Prada or something. It's like a pajama look. Because I often wear like a sweatsuit or a little knit set or something to the airport, but I try and put a nice respectable coat over it.
I always think of this anecdote about how Victoria Beckham was on a plane, I assume from London to LA with Tom Ford. And she was dressed in probably a Roland Moray dress or something. And she went to go change, and Tom Ford was like, what are you doing? And she was like, oh, I'm going to change into pajamas. And he said, no, you're not. And she went, oh, okay. And she sat down for 12 hours in a very uncomfortable dress because Tom Ford told her to.
And this is why people think that gay male fashion designers are misogynist, because of shit like this.
But he's featured in the Victoria Beckham documentary. These are the type of things I wanted answered in that documentary.
See, to me, I get that Tom Ford is like obsessed with the jet set sort of travel look and probably wishes that things were the same as they were back in the day. But also it's like there's nothing chic about a woman wearing something uncomfortable on a plane. Like that's like as fashion victim-y as wearing pajamas.
I agree with you on that. So there has been backlash to this statement, most notably the comedian Tim Dillon, who basically was like, fuck you, I'm gonna dress like shit because this is such a shitty experience. And it's like, well, don't do that.
No. Also, slippers. That's another thing. Like, what kind of slippers are you wearing? If you're wearing like a suede charvet slipper to the airport, like nothing wrong with that. Tat has these like fuzzy, I think they're Balenciaga slippers that she wears at the airport. But that's a more considered fashion choice.
I think what Sean Duffy was trying to express, or at least what I took away from that, because also I've noticed Paul has a niece who is in college now, but was in high school. Every high school student wears pajamas to school now, which I do not agree with.
No, that's horrible. The only time it's acceptable to wear pajamas is like the day after a sleepover when your like parent picks you up and you're still in pajamas.
But I think what I'm taking away from this Sean Duffy statement is the fact that like we should make a public space again. Like, there is this weird ownership I feel that people have of public spaces, which I guess, as I'm saying this, sort of contradicts, like, yes, the public should own public spaces. But it's like treating the public space like it is your home and you are dressing as you would in your home out in public, I disagree with.
Absolutely. Also, people are wearing shit at the airport that they wouldn't wear in their day-to-day lives.
Such as?
I feel like people wear things at the airport that they wouldn't wear if they were just running errands. Like, I don't see people wearing pajamas on the street ever, unless I'm at the airport.
Or you pass by a high school. See, for me, when I'm traveling, I'm usually wearing my most impractical items for no other reason than they wouldn't fit in my suitcase.
Oh, for sure. I had to wear a leather trench coat on the plane both ways to New York.
Which, by the way, if you want to wear pajamas underneath a nice coat, that's totally fine. Or is that too hot of a take, Chelsea?
No, I just think that, like, if we're wearing something that casual, it should match. Because it's never, like, pajama pants and a matching top. It's right. Always pajama pants and a hoodie.
I mean, I guess dress for the airport experience you would like to have. Perhaps, hey, perhaps your flight is delayed because you are in pajamas. Because you're dressed as if you are ready for your flight to be delayed for 6 hours.
Okay, what else?
I mean, God has answered our prayers. The Mother Mary trailer came out.
What in the Vox Lux?
Oh, I'm sorry. You mean Mother Mary, also known as the Bitter Tears of Petra Von Lux?
So was it last week's episode that we were talking about this? We were like, whatever happened to that Anne Hathaway, Michaela Cole movie? Why did Anne Hathaway start promoting it such a long time ago? Did the marketing people at A24 listen to the podcast, or did God answer our prayers?
Why not both, Chelsea? Why can't it be both?
So in case you've forgotten, this is the movie where Anne Hathaway plays a pop star and Michaela Cole plays a fashion designer. Kind of counterintuitive. I would think it would be the other way around. But anyway.
This is David Lowery's follow-up from The Green Knight. And I guess based on that pretty insane Vogue profile that happened over the summer, I wasn't anticipating that this film was going to have a supernatural element to it. But it does seem that there is some kind of witchcraft element to this film.
Oh, right. And we failed to mention that Michaela Cole and Anne Hathaway are like lesbian exes.
Is that what's happening?
Yes.
Oh.
Anywho, I just want to know why Anne Hathaway's pop star character is costumed in the same exact manner that Beyoncé was when she did that weird Lion King concept album.
Oh, right.
It's very much giving that.
So you get from the trailer that Michaela Cole worked with Anne Hathaway's pop star character at the beginning of her career. And then there was a falling out, I guess, because they broke up. A subtext or text I just did not pick up during this trailer.
I thought that when they first announced it, it was like they were exes. Or maybe I just made this up. Who knows? Take everything that we say with a grain of salt, guys.
But Anne Hathaway is in some sort of musical crisis, and she comes back to Michaela Cole designing a hate dress, which is the first time I've ever heard the phrase hate dress, and I'm obsessed.
Look, we're going to love this or we're going to hate this. I don't know if there's an in-between. I don't know if it's possible.
Mother Mary, which is described by A24 as a psychosexual pop thriller. How are we going to hate this film, Chelsea?
True.
It's not a ghost story. It's not a love story. Those are the taglines you see in the trailer. They don't exactly tell you what kind of story it is, but it's certainly not a... If you think that that dress is haunted, you guys are wrong.
Do we know when it's coming out?
Why, yes, we do, because Anne Hathaway has quite the stacked 2026. Mother Mary is coming out April 26th. The Devil Wears Prada is coming out May 1st. The Odyssey is coming out July 17th. Honestly, prayers for her stylist. Three back-to-back press tours for gigantic movies, gigantic fashion-forward movies, at least for the first two.
Damn.
What else do we got?
Well, All's Fair was renewed for season two. Thank God.
I mean, I am behind on All's Fair. I will catch up. What I learned from this press release that All's Fair is being renewed and the new season will film in early 2026 is that I guess they have to make time for the fact that Sarah Paulson will be in the fourth season of Monster playing Eileen Wuornos. Have we discussed this yet?
Wait, was that formally announced?
Yes.
Wow. Great. I can see it.
So right now they're shooting Lizzie Borden. That's going to be the next season of Monster. Wait, so this has to be the fifth season of Monster. But she's evidently playing Eileen Wuornos, which the prosthetics for that are going to go crazy.
There's also apparently some Eileen Wuornos true crime docuseries that is out now that we need to watch.
On Netflix. We've been too busy watching The Beast in Me.
Yeah, I've been too busy watching all these like very Lifetime adjacent limited series, but I want to watch that. I also do love the Eileen Wuornos documentary, Eileen Portrait of a Serial Killer, which I did see in theaters years ago. Shout out to that movie.
Not to be confused with Charlize Theron's Academy Award winning role as Eileen Wuornos.
Well, one change I would like to see is like in Monster, like Christina Ricci, like that is not a butch dyke. Come on. When you see the real woman that Christina Ricci was playing, it's shocking.
See, I thought you were going to say that an issue that people have had with the Ryan Murphy Monster series is that he's making all of these serial killers hot. Now, they've all been male serial killers. It'll be interesting. It's like, is he going to make Lizzie Borden and Eileen Wuornos hot?
I don't think he can.
That's reserved for the male serial killers.
Well, it's a great role for Sarah Paulson. I'm sure she'll kill it.
Eileen Wuornos.
Yeah.
She's also great in All's Fair. How's it going, by the way?
Well, how far behind are you?
I mean, I watched the first few episodes, so I'm probably three episodes behind.
Oh, so you've missed her two best episodes then.
Has she dropped the Linda Tripp voice?
I don't think it's a full Linda Tripp voice, but no, she has not dropped it. Her best episodes are episode 4 and 5. Also, before we move on to fashion stuff, I just have a message for the gay male British fuckettes, which is we will talk about Pillion, but it doesn't come out in the United States until February. So we haven't been able to see it yet, but we will be there on opening day because this film looks amazing and y'all seem to love it.
However, if someone would like to send us a screener, we will happily talk about this film because having watched the trailer, not since Secretary has there been such a wholesome film about a 24/7 dom sub lifestyle.
I know. Like, I feel like we got a lot of like BDSM sort of romantic dramas back in the day, or at least back in the 90s. But that's not so much of a thing anymore.
No, I mean, the last mainstream erotic film we got was 50 Shades. And we know how that went. And we do because we saw every single one in theaters.
And that was not giving the level of freakiness that I require. This seems like it could be freaky.
Oh, this film is definitely freaky.
It also seems like the main character gets a pretty fabulous makeover midway through the film, which I also love, a makeover movie.
And I have owned Alexander Skarsgård stock since season one of True Blood. So I'm a ride or die for Alexander Skarsgård. Chell, I saw the remake of Straw Dogs in theaters. I have seen the movie Tarzan. Girl.
No, I love him too. I'm on board for this. I like his kinky little outfits that he's been wearing on the press tour. He can pull it off. It's fab. Good for him.
Yeah, he's the only male actor, it seems, who's dressing on theme for his red carpet, sort of a la Margot Robbie during the Barbie press tour.
Yeah, I forget who his stylist is. Anyway, shall we move into fashion?
Absolutely. Chelsea, we have a new sponsor, Balesa Boutique, and they're doing something truly unique. They're giving our listeners free vibrators.
That's right, fuckettes. Balesa just launched their first ever silent vibrator. It is called Whisper Tech, and they sent us the full range of toys. And I have to say, I'm very impressed. These are truly perfect for visiting your family during the holidays.
The Whisper collection includes the Whisper Vibe, the Whisper Rabbit, and the Whisper Bullet. So there's a toy for whatever spot you're trying to hit. And these things are somehow so quiet, but yet so powerful, Chelsea. Don't ask us how we know this.
Yes, this collection has to be seen to be believed, mostly because you will not hear them. They are that silent.
They're so quiet, you can't even tell that I've had one on this entire ad read.
Lauren, stop masturbating while doing the podcast ad reads. I'm calling HR.
Anyway, we're doing a giveaway with Balesa where everyone wins a free spicy toy. Yep, you heard that right. A fully free Whisper Vibe or a free rose suction toy with any Whisper order. You know that viral rose-shaped suction toy that's all over your Instagram feed? It retails for $99, but you get it for free. Iconic. All you gotta do is click the link in the episode description or head to bbvibes.com/outfit. That's bbvibes.com/outfit, outfit.
The Whisper Vibes will stay completely silent, but the big question is, can you?
Ooh. So there was a Chanel show.
Have you heard?
I think the general consensus is this. The show itself is brilliant. The location, which was in a subway station, specifically the Bowery JMZ station, was not giving.
Well, the Bowery JMZ station is known for two things. Smelling like piss and open drug use.
We should say that there is an abandoned part of the station that is often used for, I mean, the myriad of limited series on Netflix that we've watched, these shows that are set in New York, but also several fashion shows have happened at this abandoned portion of the Bowery station, but still.
Wait, several or just that Tom Ford show from like 10 years ago?
The Tom Ford show, I believe the Moschino show was also at that abandoned station.
Although that Moschino show was in like an old subway car. Didn't look like the subway cars of today, looked like the subway cars of the 80s, and was, from what I remember, a very hip-hop inspired collection. I don't know. I think the weird thing about the subway setting, I mean, it goes without saying that people that wear Chanel ready-to-wear don't take the subway.
And also the people in the audience of that show probably don't take the subway. That was one of my favorite questions that someone was asking the celebrities of, like, so what do you think of the subway? When was the last time you took the subway? And Emily Ratajkowski was like, oh, I take the subway all the time. I took it last week. It's like, that's not all the time. Yesterday would be the correct answer.
I believe that Emrata takes the subway from time to time. But the Chanel customer, like, if you're wearing head-to-toe Chanel, you have a private driver. If you're buying into Chanel in a sort of accessory capacity, you're buying the shoes or the bags, you are an Uber Black XL only kind of bitch.
And also, I saw this TikTok video of someone that was like, why are there all of these SUVs in the East Village? And it was this aerial shot of someone above where the station was, and there were like 30 Black Suburban. So it's like, okay, so the people who are coming to this show were driven to the subway to witness this show.
Yeah, I think it's funny because there's nothing that is less like of the streets than Chanel. And having a fashion show in a subway location feels more aligned with brands that are anti-establishment, brands that are drawing inspiration from street fashion, like a Telfar or a Balenciaga or something like that. Or a brand that's critiquing luxury fashion as a whole and sort of bringing it into reality a bit more. Like Margiela did. Margiela also had a subway fashion show or a train station fashion show or something in the early 90s.
Yeah, we'll get into the actual show itself, which was brilliant, in a second. But just the presentation of it left me with the feeling I have. If anyone has watched The Real Housewives, every year, Chelsea, they go on a trip. And this Chanel show was like if The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills went to Catalina and we had to watch them take a ferry to Catalina, then get into a golf cart and stay in an Airbnb. It's like, I don't want to see a vacation I could take. Like, where is the glamour? And I understand Matu Blazy's reasoning for this. He was very inspired by New York. And I guess each woman was a different kind of New York woman.
Yeah, and he made the point that the subway is where the classes commingle, but it's like they don't actually.
And not the Chanel customer.
Every once in a while, the Chanel customer has to go down there for some reason, and it's probably because of speed. Like, I need to get someone somewhere downtown fast, you know, like Carrie Bradshaw when she was going to the New York Stock Exchange.
Oh, I thought you meant the drug speed.
No.
Like, they're buying drugs.
Sometimes it's faster to take the subway than it is to take a car. And if you have to get to something downtown, sometimes you have no other choice. But again, those bitches are taking a 6 train, a JMZ, honey.
There was a moment, I swear I saw a clip from the collection where a model walked out of the subway car and then went to go sit down on the wooden bench that's like in the center for where people are waiting. And I saw that model hesitate for just a second, as if she was like, I know the producer told me to sit down like I'm waiting for a subway, but I'm also in a $17,000 coat.
Oh, the craziest ones were those gorgeous, voluminous leopard gowns. And just watching the hems graze the Bowery JMC filled me with such dread and sadness. When I look at the clothes themselves, I was like, this show could have been in the Russian tea room or something like that.
Yes, a little more opulence. Again, this goes back to my Real Housewives taking a very pedestrian vacation.
But as for the clothes themselves, they were amazing. I liked the majority of them. Some of the looks, I think, were hard based on our understanding of what Chanel is and what Chanel has been. Like opening the show with a model in jeans and like a little half zip sweater was a choice.
It was. I think the least successful looks are the jeans with dresses and a t-shirt. And I understand that it probably is a customer, but
of course.
I think where Matu Blazy succeeds, as he did at Bottega, is the innovation with materials.
For sure. But also having such a purposefully casual opening look is exactly what he did at Bottega, with those jeans and those like flannel shirts that were made of leather.
And then this collection, we had a Canadian tuxedo look of sorts, but it was made of silk.
Also bizarre seeing the I Heart New York shirt, like the famous Milton Glaser design, which reminded me so much of like Ashish or Jeremy Scott, like those sort of pop art type brands.
Well, there was a lot of very American pop culture references. You have the knitted Chanel sweater, the CC, but it was in the colors and the look of the Superman logo.
That was cute. That was like a kind of butch 70s look.
Not to get on my nerd shit, but Clark Kent is from Metropolis, and that's, I don't think, New York. I believe Gotham City is the stand-in for New York City, but whatever. You also had all of these paillard dresses that were in the style of like Tony the Tiger.
Yes. I liked all the animal print stuff. Animal prints, like Chanel has done animal prints, but I don't associate it with that brand at all. We think about florals. when we think about Chanel. So that I thought was great, especially the bags and stuff.
Well, yeah, let's get into the bags because you had updates on the classic Chanel bag silhouettes. And then also Chanel is known for these kind of one-off crazy bags.
The novelty bags, which is something that Karl Lagerfeld really excelled at and something that I'm glad that Matthieu Blazy is interested in doing because these bags were incredible. There's one that was like a 255 bag essentially that was shaped like a giraffe.
Yeah, there was a flat bag that had gold-plated dog arms and legs coming out of it. There was also...
I think that was a squirrel. It had a bushy little tail.
That's right. There were squirrels, there were acorns, there were apples, there were coffee cups.
The coffee cup one was really cute. That felt very Carl also.
But a very dog-centric collection as well, or at least that was a theme throughout.
Yeah, and apparently that stemmed from his belief that in New York, your accessories are your cup of coffee and your dog.
The thing that I'm most obsessed with about this collection is Matthieu Blazy's idea of what New York is.
The dog suit, though, was probably my favorite look in the show.
It's sort of the least Chanel looking, other than the silhouette. You know, it's a lady suit that you would associate with Chanel, but it had all of these images of different kinds of dogs, something that I would more associate with like Jeremy Scott and Moschino or something.
Yeah. There was also this really amazing red and yellow and black printed suit that Kathy Horn likened it to Stephen Sprouse, which I think is fair. But to me, when I saw it, it reminded me of like Memphis style textile design, which Karl Lagerfeld was into. Not in his designs, but in his personal life. Like he had that crazy ass apartment back in the day.
Right.
But that I really loved also.
Yeah, I think he's done in quick succession two very strong collections. The next one is going to be Haute Couture, and he's just going from strength to strength.
Yeah, it's amazing that in two collections, he has made this brand a leader in design again, because they've always had the advantages of the heritage of the brand and the exclusivity of it because it is so expensive. But to have the design come up in this way is really great.
And I'm sure the brand ambassadors like Margot Robbie and Margaret Qualley are especially excited that it looks cool again.
Oh, that was also an incredible piece. The red and blue tweed jacket that Margaret Qualley wore in the short film that was also in the show. And that was so great because it had Chanel spelled out vertically on the buttons down the front. So each button had its own letter, which was so cute.
Do you want to talk about the short film with Margaret Qualley, A$AP Rocky, directed by the wonderful Michel Gondry?
I thought it was cute, but I don't have that much to say about it. Like, it was a little long. Fashion films as a medium have always been difficult for me. Like, Nick Knight made some really amazing ones like 20 years ago, and those ones that Torso did for Mugler were incredible. But I find it really hard to connect with, personally.
It was just nice to see Michel Gondry again doing his Michel Gondry thing.
Doing something.
Something about Margaret Qualley taking the subway and A$AP Rocky running to meet her at Astor Place to propose.
Anywho, shall we move on to Gucci?
Absolutely.
We are back to talk about one of our favorite sponsors, Lola Blankets.
Chell, the fuckets are dying to know, after our last ad read, have you washed your Lola blanket?
Yes, I washed it, but to be fair, I had had it for no more than 2 weeks at that point. Like, it is a throw blanket, you know? Don't judge.
And now she's washed, and she's as good as new. That's because Lola blankets are double hemmed for durability, no pilling, no shedding, even after repeated washes.
Yes, my Lola blanket is still soft post-wash, thank God. She is cozy. I continue to enjoy sitting on my couch, curled up, the fire is on, under my fluffy blanket, unwinding with a glass of Pinot Noir. It doesn't get better than that.
The Lola blanket is the perfect gift for anyone in your life who loves being cozy. like Chelsea Fairless. Don't take our word for it, though. Lola has over 10,000 five-star reviews, which is probably why they're called the world's number one blanket.
Give the gift of softness this holiday season with Lola blankets. For a limited time, our listeners are getting a huge 40% off discount on their entire order at lolablankets.com by using code OUTFIT at checkout. Just head to lolablankets.com and use code OUTFIT for 40% off. After you purchase, they will ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that Every Outfit sent you.
So Demna has debuted a lookbook. It's a Gucci pre-fall. So it's still not his first collection, correct? He still is like, my first collection is in March. Right now, I'm just experimenting.
Well, his first runway show.
Right.
Which will be technically his third collection. And this one, while it was a lookbook, it was a direct replica of the photos from like Tom Ford's big breakthrough fashion show, which had very specific staging. The show was in the dark, and then there was a spotlight that illuminated the models, including Jason Lewis, Smith Jared, who famously walked in that show. And there was like a Smith Jared looking model in this one too, which I appreciated.
Yeah, I mean, we have long predicted, we're not the only people who have said this, that Demna was going to have a fascination with the Tom Ford era of Gucci. And I do wonder, with this pre-fall lookbook and collection, if he's just getting it out of his system.
I hope he is, because this is not enough to sustain a brand like Gucci forever, referencing these early influential Tom Ford shows. It just isn't.
Also, when it comes to the bags, I'm fascinated that he's gone all in on the Dionysus bag.
Yeah, we could retire that for a minute.
But good for those people who've bought the Dionysus bag during the Alessandro Michele era and are trying to sell it on the Real Real.
Look, it's a beautiful, iconic bag, and people should really hang on to them. But is it that interesting to me right now? No.
No.
Also, Tat was looking at the show and she was like, for fuck's sake, this is so annoying, because it's like, to wear these clothes, you have to be skinny. And that wasn't the case for Balenciaga. Balenciaga, say what you will about it, was accidentally size inclusive because the clothes were cut so big. Like, I know guys that were like 3XL that shopped there. Whereas these clothes are so tailored, so skinny, you have to be tall and rail thin, which I think sucks.
Well, yeah, because 0.1% of the population will fit in that.
Whereas Chanel has gone from a brand that previously made clothes for only really tall, thin, young people for the most part, very impractical clothes, is now making practical clothes. So it's like we have one win and then like an equivalent loss.
I mean, good for us. We're not the Gucci or the Chanel customer, as we previously spoken about. Everything when it comes to luxury fashion is three times as much as it was a few years ago.
We will be customers on the secondhand market, though, at some point. Or we should. Maybe not for Chanel, because that's crazy. But Gucci is a very different price point. And certainly there's a pair of sunglasses that could be acquired at some point.
Here's what I do appreciate about Demna, and he said this in his show notes, is he referred to himself as a fashion consumer, which I feel like not a lot of designers discuss the fact that they too like to shop. But he discussed the fact that this collection is inspired by FOMO, the fear of missing out. And it's like, yeah, this is a collection for, I feel like, people our age who missed out on the Tom Ford Gucci era, that missed it terribly and would like another go at it.
Totally. And the concept was also like, this is a lost Gucci collection,
right,
from the 90s, which he did already do that same concept for Balenciaga, that which was that Harmony Korine film,
okay,
that we talked about like ages ago. It came out like early pandemic, so a lot of people missed it, but it was quite cool.
A slight digression, but I feel like you and I are the only two people that would care about the fact that Harmony Korine and his wife have divorced.
I know. R.I.P.
I found this out because Reddit's equivalent of a For You page just populates posts from different forums that they think you might be interested in. And on r/HarmonyKorine, they had the fact that he was getting divorced from his wife. And guess what? I do care. And I sent it to you because I was like, we are the only two people that would care about this.
I'm sure there are many people that care.
Any other thoughts about this Gucci pre-fall collection?
I'm looking it over now. The shoes are really fab, I will say. I like the shoes a lot. People are going to eat up these jeans with the stripes on the side. People are going to buy the accessories. But to me, like, nothing feels off.
In the way that Demna's work at Balenciaga did?
Yeah, like, it almost feels like a little too literal. Like, I understand that, like, with the handbags and some of the leather jackets, he made them look a little slouchier and more aged. And that's an example of making something, quote unquote, off. But I don't know. Most of these clothes seem to me to be very literal and not really that subversive. And unfortunately, we've lost a truly subversive voice in fashion, which is Dario Vitale at Versace.
I was wondering when you were going to bring this up. I thought of you when I saw this news story that after only a singular collection, Dario Vitale will be exiting Versace. And exiting, according to the press release, December 12th. So it's not like, well, you know, he'll design the next collection in March and then leave. It's like, no, he's out of there.
This put me in the foulest fucking mood between this Gucci collection and that. Like,
So the timing is very curious because of a few things. The Prada purchased Versace and that deal only closed 2 days ago. Dario Vitale came from Miu Miu and went to Versace. And all I can think is that I guess the consumer doesn't want to cock forward Versace.
They haven't even had the opportunity to buy anything yet, though. It's not in the stores. That to me seems crazy. Like, you're not even going to give him enough of a shot to see if people actually buy this stuff because it was so critically acclaimed. And while critical acclaim does not guarantee profitability, it is a good early indicator of profitability. And it surprises me that Prada would let him go because if there's any case study in the last decade about how to reshape a brand, it is Miu Miu.
I mean, I guess Prada was like, no more cock forward jeans, go back to mini skirts at Miu Miu, which we should say, we actually don't know where Dario Vitale is going.
Or if he's going anywhere. If they're firing him, it means they're going to bring in someone really fucking corny, like Riccardo Tisci or something.
Yes. This move to fire him so quickly, or we should give him the benefit of the doubt, Dario Vitale could have chosen to leave, but I somehow doubt it, again, given the timing. But it does feel like this panicked move of like, oh no, let's not make Versace cool. The consumer wants it to be like old school Versace. So yes, let's make it Euro trash again.
But it's like, whoever is designing Versace, it shouldn't be someone that like earnestly wants to make a scarf print men's shirt or like a bodycon crystal gown in 2025.
Right.
It should be someone like Dario Vitale who is going to explore a different facet of Versace. Because it's not as if he just threw their entire brand identity away and did his own thing. To me, his collection felt extremely reverent to the brand. But I don't know. It sucks. I feel like that was like the one thing, not the one thing, but one of the handful of things in fashion that really genuinely excited me. And it's like, you know, when you break up with someone, it's like, you don't just mourn the end of the relationship. You mourn all of the plans that you had together, like for the future.
Right. Yes.
And now I'm mourning like Versace collections that could have been.
Why do I get the feeling that you're going to figure out how to use AI and Sora just so it can give you future Dario Vitale Versace collections that won't be happening?
But see, that's the thing that's so good about Dario Vitale is an algorithm could have never predicted that. Only someone with a deep understanding of fashion as a whole and a deep understanding of that brand would concoct something like that. And that's why it was so cool, because it was so out of left field and so different from what every other brand is doing.
Well, it also calls into question, will we get to see this collection in stores? Does Dario Vitale, I assume they've shot the ad campaign for that collection.
Yeah, they've already released the ad campaign for that collection. It's real shitty.
The holidays are almost here, and if you still have names on your list, don't panic. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. You'll discover presents that feel meaningful and personal, never rushed or last minute. You've heard me talk about them before, but Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, so every gift feels special and thoughtfully chosen. I still have some family members, namely my cousin's children, that I still need gifts for, and I'm looking to Uncommon Goods to help me. Like, who wouldn't love a Greatest Chocolates of the World exploratory set? Or a Taste of Italy Adventure snack box, which actually would be perfect for my mother-in-law. They truly have something for everyone, including those hardest to shop for on your list. So don't wait, make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/outfit. That's uncommongoods.com/outfit for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. Well, I don't think this is going to improve your mood, but I would love to non-consensually talk at you about The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, which is a show that I've been watching.
Oh, God.
There are things that you watch that I don't watch and vice versa, but I have to tell you about this show. Because you do not need to watch this show, and I do think that you watching The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives would put you in an even more foul mood. I have sent you clips of the show.
To be fair, I did watch the first couple of episodes of this show, so I have a little bit of awareness, although that was a long time ago.
But see, it wasn't a long time ago, and this is one of the things I love about The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, and this is what they're giving me that the Kardashians aren't. There have only been three seasons of this show, Chelsea. Two of the seasons, the second and third, premiered this year. We got two seasons of this show, and guess what? They got a fourth in the can.
So, is my memory correct? What I remember of this is that they're all influencers, like mommy influencers.
Yes. It is a show centered around something called Mom Talk. Now, what is Mom Talk exactly? Mom Talk is kind of like Fight Club, except instead of the first rule being to never talk about Mom Talk, all they do is talk about Mom Talk. And I sent you this clip where one of the women, Macy, is putting up a pride flag in her front yard. And she's like, this is what Mom Talk can do. We're going to smash the patriarchy. And I just texted you and I was like, Chelsea, they literally do dances where they shake their ass. We should say this show started because, yes, they got TikTok famous during the pandemic. And then one of them, Taylor Frankie, revealed that her and her husband at the time were soft swinging with other Mormons. And then it was this scandal. But the show itself might be the best reflection of influencer culture I've ever seen, even better than I Love LA, because they treat Mom Talk like it's this philosophical collective, but really it's just to keep brand deals going. Because now that they have a following, they're not friends with each other. They don't like each other. They're actively trying to sabotage each other. But then there'll be these moments where it's like, oh, we got this Tresemme deal and Whitney has to come to the house and shoot content with us because the brand's for all of us. And they're like, all right. Like, Chelsea, there is a woman named Whitney, as I just invoked, who was on Dancing with the Stars, who literally would not come back for the third season of filming because the producers wouldn't meet her demands. And one of the demands was that she wanted a speaking role on a scripted show. And she literally only comes back halfway through the season because she hears that a casting director will be casting someone for Dancing with the Stars from this show. And she plainly says it. I feel like other shows hide it.
Okay, you're not really convincing me to watch The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives.
No. This is for the fuckheads who are watching the show. The moment that turned me to start watching it was there is a woman named Jen Affleck. And I saw a tweet where they were like, there is this woman who keeps saying that she's related to Ben Affleck and she's not. And I, as someone who is Affleck trash, I was like, I'm sold. Chelsea, this woman didn't understand her husband's sarcasm. She spent the first two seasons telling everyone that she was related to Ben Affleck through her husband, whose last name is Affleck, because her husband sarcastically was like, yeah, we're related to Ben Affleck. And so there's a scene where a man has to describe sarcasm to his wife, and she's not getting it.
She never thought to do like a basic Google search.
No. She's like, but your father said that it was true. And her husband's like, he was joking.
Oh my God.
I'm also obsessed with the show because it gets to the heart of the hypocrisy of modern Mormonism, because I guess one of the tenets of Mormonism is you can't drink coffee. You can't drink caffeinated beverages like coffee or tea. But I assume because soda didn't exist when Joseph Smith wrote the book, they all drink soda all the time. Like, there are several scenes, Chelsea, where they are cracking a Dr. Pepper at 8 a.m.
See, this I never understand, because if I was so religious that I believed in, like, hell, I would be like a fundamentalist.
It's fascinating. I mean, they all have horrific trauma. Sexual trauma, emotional abuse, physical abuse in their past. Several people on this show have had to take breaks from filming to do intensive therapy.
Jesus. Okay, well, things just got more interesting.
But then there'll be a picnic scene. Like, there is literally one woman who has two children who's never had an orgasm before. But then she'll start a conversation about, like, hey, has anyone done anal? And they're all like, yes.
Wait, because they were, like, doing anal before they lost their virginity?
I would love to dig deeper on this concept, but then it just goes to a different montage sequence where they're getting fillers, which is the other thing I'm obsessed with. They all get Botox and fillers, and they justify it because they're like, well, you know, in the book, Joseph Smith talked about bettering yourself and making yourself the most perfect version. And that's how they justify going to med spas.
Look, to each their own.
Now, I will give this to the show. All of the women are the breadwinners, and they say this all the time, openly, in front of their gay husbands.
That's cool.
See, that is cool. The last thing I will tell you about is just the arc of season three is, did this woman, Jessie, have an affair with a man named Marciano from Vanderpump Villa? A lot of words, I'm sure, went in one ear, out the other. I don't even watch Vanderpump Villa. What I do want to bring to your attention is, an affair. Sounds juicy, right? She kissed this man twice. And her husband's like, you had an affair. And she's like, I did have an affair. Because I kissed this man twice and I talked to him for 2 weeks. So it was a physical and an emotional affair. And if we're giving Steve a pass from the first Sex and the City film for sleeping with a woman once, I mean, two kisses, does that equal an affair?
No. It's cheating, obviously. But was it really two kisses?
That's what we're trying to figure out.
Like, how trustworthy is this guy? Because we know that Steve is trustworthy, and that's the difference.
Marciano is not trustworthy. He also had a dalliance with another woman named Demi, who's in the show. And there is a theory that he can't keep his story straight about what he did with what woman because he cannot tell them apart. And I think...
So, like, the Donald Trump thing?
That he couldn't recognize E.G. Carroll and thought it was his ex-wife?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, yes, in a slightly darker way. I mean, you tell me, Chelsea, do these look like the same women to you?
Yes. I would never in a million years be able to tell them apart.
So we're Team Marciano is what you're saying.
Look, I'm never going to watch this show, but I will stand by you in your hot takes and your opinions about this show.
I also am never going to watch the final season of Stranger Things, or really any season of Stranger Things.
Have you never watched any Stranger Things?
I think I watched the first season, but I know you do, and I would love for you to tell me what is going on with the final season of Stranger Things, which is part one of two?
Part one. They dropped 4 episodes of season 5, and...
And it's taken 10 years for us to get 5 yes, seasons?
Maybe even more than 10 years at this point. Look, I've watched every single episode of Stranger Things, but even I have the flimsiest grasp on the plot of the show and the characters because the new seasons drop so infrequently. Like, I was a different person when the first season of Stranger Things aired.
Oh, wait, no. I have watched Stranger Things recently because I watched it over your shoulder a year ago when we were traveling in Australia and you were watching episodes on your iPad.
Right, because I hadn't watched season 4. Look, I will do my best to explain this show from what I understand. There is a spooky little town called Hawkins, Indiana, and in that town, fucked up shit happens because beneath the town, there's this place called the Upside Down, which is basically like a scary parallel version of the town. And
yes, they did this in Buffy as well. The town was above a hellmouth.
Sounds very similar. because kids are constantly like going missing down in the Upside Down.
Do you think Stephen King hates this show?
I wonder. Also, scary vaginal creatures called demigorgons are escaping from down there and like coming up and like killing people or like taking them or whatever.
This I understand. Winona Ryder had a child. That child disappeared in the Upside Down. But that was like literally 15 years ago.
But every single season, it's the same plot because there's always a child that needs rescuing. Okay. And it's always about like finding the child or like trapping the monsters or like whatever the fuck.
Why was David Harbour in Russia last season?
Honestly, I forget. He was captured, I think. He was in like a labor camp of some kind. I don't know. The Germans also have demigorgons, which they have like captured to use for military purposes, I believe. Also, there are like children that have like supernatural abilities. The biggest one being Millie Bobby Brown's character, 11.
I know this isn't the point and doesn't have relevance to the season itself, but during this press tour, I saw a clip of her being interviewed and I thought it was Bella Thorne.
Because she had the long hair.
And a lot of work done.
The shaving her head was the biggest glow up Millie Bobby Brown could have had. And I stand by this. Every time an actress has to shave their head for a role, be it Demi Moore for G.I. Jane or Emma Stone for Begonia, instant glow up.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But especially for Millie Bobby Brown, who genuinely looks so cool with a shaved head.
She looked incredibly cool, but it's become apparent with her film choices. I was going to say outside of Netflix, but it's kind of inside of Netflix because she only makes Netflix movies, that she is not as major as 11 with a shaved head. And I always think of her when Winona Ryder was talking about the fact of like working with these kids and how, you know, she has such a voracious love of film history. Even when she was a kid actor, she was talking about how she would recommend movies to the younger cast members of Stranger Things. And they'd always be like, okay, but how long is the movie? And I'm like, that's Millie Bobby Brown.
Who knows? I mean, on the show, as you know, there's this core group of kids, right? 11, the little Bob Dylan, who has the best career out of all of them, it seems. The gay one that got canceled recently, who is also gay on the show.
Okay.
And Sadie Sink, who is in a coma for some reason this season. I completely forget why. And there's like two other kids that who cares. And then there's another group of like older teens, which is like Maya Hawke, who is like the show's resident lesbian. She has a friend that kind of looks like a sort of, she looks exactly like the model Michelle Hicks. Like this woman has the strongest jawline you've ever seen. And then there's two like random like white brunette guys that both look like Harry Styles.
Okay.
And all of these teens and these young kids have basically formed a militia because they're constantly like trying to save one of their friends or like hunt these monsters and like try and save their like little town, which everyone should move, frankly. Like, this place is a nightmare.
I mean, you must be able to get a house for, like, $12.
Especially in the 80s? Yeah. But this season, it's like there's this other monster called Vecna who kind of looks like a cross between a skeleton and a tree. And he's, like, extra evil and extra scary and, like, trying to kill everyone. So he's the main focus.
Wasn't he from last season? Isn't that the British actor Jamie Bowles Campbell?
He was in last season also. Yes, but he's like the super monster.
In Buffy parlance, he's the big bad of the season. Also, you've yet to explain, where is David Harbour and Winona Ryder in this season?
They're back.
From Russia?
Yeah, they got back. I completely forget what happened, but they survived, and now they're basically focused on protecting 11 because she basically, like, escaped from the sort of, you know, they're always trying to study this bitch and, like, turn her into a weapon, kind of.
Matthew Modine.
Yes, but I'm pretty sure he died at the end of last season, or maybe he didn't. I think he did.
You're saying this because you haven't seen his beautiful white hair and just slim body this season.
I'm just saying this because I literally forget, but like you don't have to know what's going on to watch this show. I'm telling you. The Stranger Things fans are like screaming at me.
I don't think so. It feels to me as an outsider that Stranger Things has gone the way of Game of Thrones, where like everyone is annoyed with the series by the end of the series.
And David Harbour's whole thing this season is just keeping Eleven safe. I mean, to be fair, that's his plot line like almost every season. And Winona Ryder is aiding in that.
All right. I mean, there's no way that this show has a satisfying ending other than vanquishing evil. Or maybe they don't vanquish the evil. The evil takes over. That'd be way cooler.
If it had a satisfying ending, I probably wouldn't even understand it to begin with. But I'm here for this show. To me, it always provides me with so much escapism. I love being in the little world.
That's what The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives does for me. I want to drive a Rivian, which they seem to all drive Rivians, and live in a white hospital box house and drive to Swig and get a dirty soda. That's the other thing I forgot to mention, Chelsea. They don't drink alcohol. So instead, they make these disgusting soda concoctions that they call dirty soda. And finally, this woman had the great idea to just make a drive-through establishment where you can get dirty sodas. So like, for example, dirty sodas like a Dr. Pepper with like hazelnut syrup and lime and some coconut cream.
Ew, that's disgusting. I feel like if you want that vibe, it's all about those like soda machines at like a nice AMC where it's like you can put in the cherry to the Diet Coke or whatever.
You're not talking about suicides, which is just putting every soda flavor. You're talking about, yes, those beautiful AMC machines where they give you every variation of a Diet Coke you could possibly get.
Oh, also on a related note, I recently saw that MacGuffin's, which is the bar within AMC theaters.
The one at the Grove?
There's one at the Grove. There's one at the Century City location. Wait, they have merch now.
First of all, they have a name?
Yeah, it's MacGuffin's.
I had no idea. First of all, as we've noted, the worst bar ever.
Yeah, where do you think we're getting our disgusting tequila sodas from? And our rancid Prosecco?
AMC Bar? I didn't know it had a name. And now you're telling me it has merch? I bet it's as good as the service there.
It is. I'll show you.
Have you ever waited days to receive your own money through an app? Or worse yet, you get hit with big fees just to move your own money faster? Well, that's a thing in the past with Cash App. Cash App is a safe, easy, and fast way to send, receive, and transfer money to family and friends. I love Cash App because they are there for you when you make a mistake. For instance, I once sent my therapist the payment meant for my facialist, thanking her for the quote, glow up, nail emoji, smiley emoji. My therapist was very confused, but with Cash App, I was able to receive my money back instantly with minimal embarrassment. And Cash App just released a new status program for the way people actually spend called Cash App Green. It unlocks new ways for you to pay, get rewarded, and easily grow or manage your money on your terms. Now, when you spend at least $500 a month with the Cash App card or Cash App Pay, you earn green status, which unlocks benefits like up to $200 of free overdraft coverage, higher borrow limits, and custom personalized cashback offers every Friday at places you love to shop. Turn everyday spending into status with Cash App Green. Download Cash App today or visit cash.app/new to learn more about this and other great features launching now. For a limited time, new Cash App customers can earn $10 if they use the code CASHAPP10 in their profile at signup and send $5 to a friend within 14 days. Terms apply. Cash App is a financial services platform, not a bank. Banking services provided by Cash App's bank partners, prepaid debit cards issued by Sutton Bank, member FDIC. Cash App Green, overdraft coverage, borrow, cashback offers, and promotions provided by Cash App, a Block, Inc. brand. Visit cash.app/legal/podcast for full disclosures.
Okay, it's time to talk about a show that both of us have seen, which is The Beast in Me. This is a Lifetime adjacent limited series that recently came out on Netflix. It stars Claire Danes and some guy.
The some guy being Matthew Rhys. He was in The Americans. He is a Welsh actor who has been on American television for 20 plus years. I first recognized him, or I first saw him, I should say, in a show called, do you remember Brothers and Sisters that was on AMC? Rachel Griffiths was in it.
I never saw it, but I remember it existing.
He plays the gay brother.
I can imagine he plays gay very well.
He does, from my memory of that show, which I guess we were supposed to understand that Rachel Griffiths, Calista Flockhart, Matthew Rhys are all siblings?
Crazier things have happened.
Anyway, yes. So the show The Beast in Me, if you haven't seen it, is about Claire Danes, who is a writer of some sort that lives in Oyster Bay. And Matthew Rhys moves across the street, or should I say Niall Jarvis. First of all, the man is Welsh and his name is Niall Jarvis. And we're supposed to understand that he comes from like a big multi-generational Long Island, New York adjacent family.
Like real estate family, right?
Yes. I mean, it's clearly, you can see the real world references when they were creating the show. It's like a Donald Trump sort of thing. But also, like, what if Donald Trump was Robert Durst?
Yes. It's what if Donald Trump was Robert Durst and Robert Durst was building the Hudson Yards?
Which they don't even pretend. They're just like, it's called the Jarvis Yards.
We also didn't mention that Claire Danes' character is a bitter middle-aged lesbian. And speaking of playing gay, she is very good. She does zero gay shit in this show, but she really nails the mannerisms. And I don't think she's ever played gay before, or it's not coming to mind for me. I mean, she was in The Hours, but...
I wanted to ask you, how did you feel about the sartorial choice to convey that she's a lesbian, that she constantly is wearing ill-fitting chore coats and blazers?
Hey, she's a certain type of lesbian, and I respect the costuming for that reason.
So Matthew Rhys, or Niall Jarvis, moves across the street from Claire Danes, and everyone believes that he killed his previous wife. And Claire Danes forms a fascination with him, or something. Really... Niall Jarvis wants to befriend her because he wants to create a running path that will run behind her house and she won't give him permission.
Yes. And he's also has a second wife who he hasn't murdered, played by Brittany Snow, who is in everything.
Every Netflix thing. I will say this show, you're saying that it's Lifetime adjacent, but I do feel like Netflix has a genre where it's like, it's this New York-based show. A murder happens, or a murder has happened before the show, there is some law enforcement character that gets enmeshed with the protagonist who has an uneasy friendship or relationship with the antagonist who maybe is going to kill her or not going to kill her.
Well, I think the core tenets of a Lifetime film, it's like rich white woman and someone's trying to get her ass. In The Girlfriend, which came out recently, it was her son's fiance. In All Her Fault, it was, I'm not sane because that spoils the entire series, but it's always rich woman, nice house, someone is out to get the bitch.
But he's not, though. I don't know how to discuss the rest.
He is. What do you mean he's not?
Well, he does have a fair point, which is Claire Danes is suffering from writer's block. She wrote this blockbuster memoir about her bad relationship with her father, or her conflicted relationship with her father, which I thought was going to play more of a role in the plot. But it feels like pick a struggle, because this is a slight spoiler, but I'm going to say it's a trigger warning because I would have loved to have known this before going into the series. Claire Danes is a fuck up because her son died in a car accident, which is how the series begins. And I almost didn't move forward with the rest of the show.
I don't care whether you'd watch The Beast in Me or not, but I will be more sensitive of that moving forward for sure. Don't watch All Her Fault.
Oh, I'm not going anywhere near that show. No, I can already tell that is not for me. But I do have questions about The Beast in Me. Are we sure that Claire Danes is a good writer? What I was trying to say earlier is that Niall Jarvis, when he meets her, is like, what are you writing about now? And she's like, I'm writing about the friendship between Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Antony Scalia. And he's like, that's a terrible book. And she's like, no, I think it'll be good. And that is a great fake bad book.
Well, I think the point was that it was boring. I think the whole thing with Claire Danes' writing is that she can only really write about something in her real life. And she's written this memoir about her father, and now she's attempting to write the 2025 version of In Cold Blood about her billionaire neighbor, which sounds like a great premise for a book.
It really does, although he gives her the idea, because he's such a narcissist. He's like, you should write about me. And of course, understandably, his father is like, that's a terrible idea. He's like, no, 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 I think this is going to work.
See, with The Beast in Me, I feel like the first half of the show was really solid, and then it really waned at the end.
Okay, this was going to be my point. These Netflix series need to stop being 8 episodes. they need to be 6 episodes because all of these shows, you think it's building for the first 3 episodes. There's a lot of like mysterious world building, and then it always craps the bed at the end. We should just say the penultimate episode of this series is an entire episode that is a fucking flashback.
Yeah, that was unnecessary. But if you like the elevated Lifetime genre, I don't even know if they're that elevated, actually. Like, a truly elevated Lifetime film would be, like, May-December.
I was just gonna say May-December. I don't know. I'm all for this kind of show, which, yeah, is an elevated Lifetime show, or, you know, it's kind of soapy, what have you. It just, for me, when you find out the true intentions of the character, kind of how the plot eventually spills out, a lot of it doesn't make sense.
I mean, you just have to suspend your disbelief, Lauren. This is Lifetime logic.
It's Lifetime logic, but unlike a Lifetime film that's like a clean 88 minutes, this is 8 hours long. We don't even dive into the fact at all that Brittany Snow is essentially living a dead woman's life. Because for basically the first 6.5 hours, you're like, oh, this is Niall Jarvis's new wife, and she's the one, you know, filling in for this dead wife, and she's got this woman's shadow that she has to live under. And then you learn in the flashback episode, wait, she was her assistant?
We learned that before the flashback episode.
Did we?
We learned that in like episode 1. You clearly weren't paying close attention.
I wasn't.
Like, I'm pretty sure that Brittany Snow actually explained that to Claire Danes verbatim, or like Niall, what is his name?
Jarvis.
Niall Jarvis did.
How can you forget Jarvis Yards? We also haven't gotten into the
fake AOC.
Yeah, there's a fake AOC. Which they're trying to win the fake AOC's affection so that they can continue to build Jarvis Yards. And their idea is just to give her a bunch of land that they own that she can build affordable housing on. And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. That's actually great.
Yeah, it seems like you solved this problem completely.
I need these shows to be shorter. Another Netflix show that I watched that I know you probably did not is, shit, now I can't remember the name. I think it's Death by Lightning. It's the limited series about the president, James Garfield, who was only president for 4 months before he was assassinated. Michael Shannon plays the president, and Matthew McFadden, who was Tom Wobbskans in Succession, plays the guy that ended up assassinating him. And guess what, Chell? 4 hours. Mwah. To be fair, he was only president for a few months. But The Beast in Me takes place over, what would you say, a week?
I'd say a couple of weeks. Maybe more than that, because Claire Danes has like started writing a whole ass book, and she's already handed a chapter to her editor and been like, what do you think?
4 chapters.
Exactly. No, it's definitely a month has gone by, at least.
I do think that if you go from House of Cards to The Perfect Couple to now The Beast in Me, like, it is diminishing returns with these prestige limited series. Having said that, I will watch every single one.
Same. They're just comforting. That's all it is. Do I wish they were slightly better? Yes. I wish we got May-Decembers all the time. But we don't live in that world.
I feel like at this point, you and I could write one of these by just doing like Mad Libs.
We just need to combine the plot of May, December. What else is a good one of those? To Die For, another one I would say.
Yeah, just take true crime elements and dramatize them.
Yeah.
Just take a true crime case that happened in the 90s and put it through a Shonda Rhimes drama machine.
Let's get to work.
All right. On that note, we will say goodbye for this week, and we'll be back next week to talk about God knows what.
Who the fuck knows? Bye, guys.
Bye.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints. Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.